Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. Books.
Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW. KCRW.com. I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking to Michael Ondaatje, who has entered a new phase of his career. I think it began with his last novel, The Cat's Table. It continues with Warlight. It really is a book about two children fending their way through the end of World War II in London, as they're coming to understand that what they grew up with during the war is nothing like the truth they face after the war. Their father is missing. Their mother is not the woman they thought she was. One of the children, the girl, Rachel, will never speak to the mother again. The brother will actually never be able to speak to her again by the end of the book. And I was left kind of breathless. The book is punctuated by songs of the period. One of the songs quoted is Begin the Begin. I think there's down on the shore an orchestra playing.
Yes.
But the orchestra is playing during the romantic scene going on. The begin is going on as the background to the romantic. And we see in this book that no matter what's happening, down on the shore, the orchestra's playing. Something else is happening, too. We watch a chess game while an opera is taking place on a stage. The game is being played in a box at the theater. There are an incredible number of highly burnished, perfect sequences. And yet, you'd be so nice. You'd be paradise to come home to and love, says Cole Porter in the song, You'd Be So Nice to Come Home To. And this is a novel about coming home, but no one gets to come home to anyone in love. A George and Ira Gershwin song, But Not For Me. They're writing songs of love, but not for me. So love songs turn out to be how everyone else gets a love song, but not me. Now, Mr. Ondaatje has always used song lyrics. In fact, one of his books of poetry is called There's a Trick with a Knife I'm Learning to Do, and that's from a Rodgers and Hart lyric. There's a trick with a knife I'm learning to do, and everything I've got belongs to you. So what we see is that he's bringing all of his gifts into play against the action of his book. The book is entertainment, but the events of the book involve sorrow, the end of a war that will never end, that we still live in the aftermath of, World War II, and incomprehension that these characters will never know who one another are, because it seems that the essence of the novel is for the reader to be in a state of only partially resolved confusion, that we never really solve the questions that a great novel sets us, that they exist past the final pages. How do you know what you can leave unanswered, Michael?
Well, I think a lot of it depends on where you stop the novel. You know, I mean, quite seriously. I mean, often I always imagine there's going to be more in the novel. I often write an extra 15 pages and realize that, in fact, you're saying too much. And you go back and you reduce it to another moment of leaving, and which is, I mean, this novel ends with Nathaniel leaving the house, but it's a much earlier scene in his life. And it's leaving with some kind of hope, perhaps. I mean, the fact that he's leaving that house, there's some chance of evolving further. But, I mean, up to that point in the story that we know, it's a fateful life. You know, he's, as you said, lost every character who's close to him. He's been looking in the wrong direction. He's been hunting the story of the mother when someone else could have been the one he tried to find, in a way. And the sister tells him that.
Yes, and this is a book, too. It's in two major sections. And part two is stylistically absolutely different from part one. Part one is, I would call it, an extravaganza. Mm-hmm. The sentences are showpiece sentences. All sorts of beautiful events are dovetailed into the sentence. Part two, the character perhaps has been left so stunned that all he can do is try and put things together, do a bit of research himself, try and figure out who he's been living among and consequently who he is.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I think, you know, in that whole idea of, you know, that he is very much an orphan, the idea that he's trying to tell a story of the family or memoir, you know, all of that becomes pretty evident in part two.
Now we're going to hear something from the beginning of part two, which defines that orphan state.
When you attempt a memoir, I'm told, you need to be in an orphan state. So what is missing in you, and the things you have grown cautious and hesitant about, will come almost casually towards you. A memoir is the last inheritance, you realize, so that during this time you must learn how and where to look. In the resulting self-portrait, everything will rhyme, because everything has been reflected. If a gesture was flung away in the past, you now see it in the possession of another. So I believed something in my mother must rhyme in me, she in her small hall of mirrors, and I in mine.
Michael and Dasha reading from an early paragraph in part two. Now, this sense that these characters that we think we've come to know are in fact in a hall of mirrors. Yes, everything is going to rhyme. The reader's eyes are going to bug at how well organized this has been, but never in the way that you suppose. Go ahead.
Oh, I, you know, the thing is, you know, I mean, as I said before, one writes a novel, and it's always for me a state of discovery. It's curiosity at first, and then it's a discovery of the characters you've set up in the first part. I mean, I don't know what the mother is like at the beginning, or what Nathaniel is like, or the daughter. I mean, they come on as at the beginning almost as one-dimensional characters. And then they grow more and more profound, even if someone like the daughter may seem to be consistently antagonistic or antisocial. I mean, he becomes much more than that in the novel. And that was a pleasure for me in writing the novel, to discover more and more truth in those characters.
Now, the daughter is a character. His full nickname, people have full names and full nicknames here. His full nickname is the Pimlico Darter, and he was apprenticed as a boxer.
Right.
By his parents.
Right. So he doesn't like his parents at all.
He doesn't. Well, of course not. They've been making money off him. Every time I try to remember, what is his name? The jabber, the puncher, the darter. And then I remembered, I couldn't remember it because I didn't pair it with the word I needed to pair it with, the daughter. And eventually one of those rhymes that you're talking about, the daughter and the daughter, will begin to make sense together.
Right.
And on this Warlight is a novel which, because it's taking place at the end of a war, in the fog, in the dark, among people who've been living under false names and carrying on spy-like procedures, this is a book where the restoration of order after mayhem is going to be, well, what we used to say, the winner tells the history of the time he lived through. And so this is sort of the beginning of the winner's history. And so things that you've won turn out to be things that you've lost. Some rockets never make it overseas. Some fall back and hit the area from which they've been sent. We never know the consequences of our actions. And so Michael and Dasha, who's been engaged in history throughout his novels, histories of different places, wonderfully interesting people. In this novel, we really see history is no refuge. We don't ever settle into a comfortable knowledge of who we've become in the aftermath. Now, tell me, you've said that it's okay for you not to know, but what is the state of your confusion when you're writing a novel?
It's not a feeling of confusion. It, as I said, I think it's a feeling of discovery, of curiosity, I think. You know, I mean, it's like how you invent a character. I mean, in any of my books, even in something like De Visadero, they had the two daughters, the two girls, teenage girls, but I know nothing more than the fact that there's an outline. Or most of my novels begin with 80% uncertainty about who they are, first of all, and then what kind of people they are. So the discovery for me is to find out who they are and also what kind of people they are. And so it's not confusion, but there is confusion while I'm unearthing all this stuff, you know, and finding that someone who seems one-dimensional earlier on becomes much more complex. Or the mother who is just an unknown figure becomes more and more detailed. And in all the scenes we have with her, she becomes more and more detailed, even if she's not talking. I mean, for me, the scene when the boy actually throws a plate and it cuts her head, and she just holds up her hand and to tell him, don't come near me and protect me or comfort me. I can deal with this. This is nothing, you know. And something like that tells you everything about her nature during the war.
Listen, I've been through far worse.
Yes.
You can't hurt me as much as I've already been hurt. I had no idea which, if any, of these characters would return. Some do, some don't. Some do and bring further revelations with them. And so I felt you were redefining for me what a novel can do and where an author can begin to deal the deck of cards differently, that we're not playing solitaire and putting every card back in order, that there's going to be a lot that never fits together, and that not fitting together is part of fitting together.
I think this is actually important. I mean, I read a book by Donald Ritchie some time ago talking about East and West and some of the differences in both cultures artistically, in novels and films. And he talks about how, in some way, Asian film prizes the quality of indecision in the structure of a work, so that what you're doing is you're following the brush. And in many ways, I mean, I was totally unaware of this, but it was much an echo for me when in the way I write. And so that there was that indecision, you know, where do we go? Do we go towards the mother? Do we go towards Agnes? And, you know, and then these revelations keep occurring. And so that becomes the, not the pleasure, but the great tension, the confusion. You know, in the last stages of writing the book, which is that you've written the book and then you're finally kind of doing the final edits, where's the focus going to be? Who's going to end the book, as opposed to not just what happens at the end, but who's going to end the book?
Who does this book belong to? Who is this book the story of? And it gets more and more exciting as you realize that you haven't known, that as you've gone along, more and more has been suspended. And then part of the excitement of the suspension is finding out, oh, that stuff, that answer stuff, that's very old-fashioned. You know, these hidden identities and stuff. No, the new novel is open to showing you, I can complete and give you the feeling of completeness, the warm, comfortable feeling of completeness that a novel promises, even without telling you all of my secrets. I know, of course, I'm the writer much more than you know. I did much more research than you'll ever do unless you're a graduate student. But look here. Look at how satisfying it is not to know what becomes of the father. Not to know. We're told that the sister is seeing someone. Who is he? We're not going to know. It's not crucial to this novel. This novel is defining the questions that it needs to answer as it goes along. And if you've done your job properly, the reader isn't going, huh? The reader is saying, yes, I didn't need to know. This is the way a novel should be, full of revelation and the refusal of revelation.
There's a line that Olive Lawrence says, the self is not the principal thing. I think that's a line, but in fact it's a line from James Salter in one of his books.
Yes,
the self
yes.
is not the important thing.
Yeah,
and for someone who's writing a memoir, he has to realize that in some way.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. You're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. I'm talking with Michael Ondaatje about his fabulous novel Warlight. We'll continue after this short break.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air, new music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, this is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Michael Ondaatje about his novel Warlight, where siblings living in post-World War London grow up without parents and are raised by a strange figure with a group of eccentric friends. Now, you just mentioned that woman who told Nathaniel that the self is not particularly important. She's an enormously engaging character. What is her name again?
Olive Lawrence, yeah. And, you know, for me, she was the magical one, you know, because when I wrote that early section about her coming into the house for the first time, I really knew nothing about her. It was just Olive Lawrence. I had a name. And I sat down and I kept discovering this wonderful person who was, you know, in the most intriguing one in the book in some ways.
She's fabulous. But this is a woman who can tell the children she's walking with what key the crickets are humming in and why that key, who they're talking to in these different keys. She can tell them that it's not worth knowing too much about yourself. What you need to know is about the world. And she is a naturalist. Well, we talked about mirrors as another naturalist in the book, and this is a character who really should have wound up with our narrator, or maybe wound up with one of his influences, a man named Marsh Fellon.
Marsh Fellon, yep.
Yes, who is a naturalist too. And of course, she doesn't end up with anyone. It's so interesting to come through this novel seeing what you've been thinking and then seeing, No, you've just made one assumption after another. They've had nothing to do. Of course this woman, who knows everything. Knowing everything is no better than knowing only yourself. So her telling them that the self doesn't matter is only half her story. It's God, every time she appears,
yes, she's wonderful.
She has something fabulous to say. And Nathaniel's mother says, oh, she's not only an ethnographer, and indeed she isn't. Now, again, you were tempted to give her to someone, weren't you?
No, I hadn't planned. I mean, I thought she was, I mean, she was with the daughter at the beginning, and it's a kind of a comic romance at the beginning with the goat head that she has to eat in his company and so forth. But, I mean, I thought something could have happened, but it didn't seem right, you know. That was, Marsh Fellin was another kind of character. I don't think she would have fully belonged to him.
Now tell me, you've written a novel about jazz musicians coming through slaughter. How much is the sense of what's right a jazz sense?
That's interesting. Well, yes, I think, you know, there's jazz that goes too far and stops a bit too late. In that sense, that we can learn from jazz. I mean, for a long time, I used to believe that the traditional 3-minute, you know, piece of music by Louis Armstrong and the Hot Five was like the perfect form for a novel. You know, it was, everyone had their solo, they were independent, and then suddenly they came together at the end in a group, and that was in 3 minutes. You know, that was sort of an early stage. I mean, I think someone like Mahler is more complicated, you know, and I just heard Mahler's Fifth Symphony recently in San Francisco, and it was remarkable. It just altered everything, the rules of how big a canvas could be.
Oh, yes. Well, this is great, too, because in addition to jazz, there's a commentary on Mahler, who wrote over certain portions of the music the word schwa, S-C-H-W-A, which means basically hard or difficult or not easy. And there are certain things that are supposed to be not easy. And he's telling the people playing the music, don't simplify, don't solve the problem, don't make it easier than it's supposed to be. This was supposed to bend your ability to play and bend the listener's ear. And there are these sections in your book, too. Say the word again.
Schwer, I think is how you pronounce it. Schwer.
And it's fascinating because, of course, that is a part of what a modern musician knows and what a modern novelist knows, when the book should surrender ease, that ease has nothing to do with it. Mm-hmm. That suddenly difficulty, confusion, not being certain becomes part of the novel. And just as we talked about things rhyming before, I think I'll be reading Warlight 2 or 3 more times, getting the sense of where rhymes appear and when they're dropped. When we don't have to rhyme, when sometimes the hall of mirrors is a hall of smashed mirrors.
Right, right, exactly.
I think, Michael, that you've really taken your novel many steps further, both in the direction of pleasure and in the direction of pain in this book. I can't think of a book that surprised or moved me more. Do these feelings accompany the writing as well? Did you know?
Well, I think, you know, when you're inside the book, you're in the scene, you're kind of enclosed in the scene, and you're not fully aware until you go back and rewrite it or fix it or shorten it or lengthen it, whatever it is, you know, you're not really, there's no judgment when you're writing the story. You're not saying this is working or this is funny or whatever it is. So you are...
A lot of it is funny.
Yeah, I think it is now. But I think, you know, when you're within the book, within the the state of Nathaniel's mind in the last section is you're so caught up in and so fraught that you're not thinking about what it means or what the effect is. You're just with him. You're discovering him. And that's the preoccupation of me as a writer, you know, I'm writing those scenes. But you're also discovering. You discover the piece of needlework that's done that he finds, you know, in front of him when he's visiting the data, and which kind of alters everything in the book up
alters
to that point.
Alters everything. And we've been given a clue before about pearls,
right,
but we haven't known how to apply the clue.
Right.
And so it's not until we come to that, what looks like a dead end in this maze of mirrors, and instead, when we attach it to the thing we didn't know how to use, the little bit of information about a pearl, now I see. And you have had a great deal of fun in this book, I think, saying I was certain that I had to be uncertain. There are lots of balanced phrases that tell us that the character knew he had to not know.
Right.
It's a very calming reminder of how our minds work. When do we feel absolutely at sixes and sevens nervous and frightened about not knowing? And when do we feel secure? This is perfect. I would rather not know. I've been talking with Michael Ondaatje, the author of Warlight, published by Knopf. Thank you very much for joining me, Michael.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
I hope you can tell by the sound of this conversation that this is a book that you should read, and better right away before people start telling you about how to read it. Be surprised on your own. Blunder into the Hall of Mirrors rather than proceeding confidently. It's much more fun that way. You can comment on today's show at kcrw.com/bookworm, download the podcast from kcrw.com or from Apple Podcast or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen on demand with KCRW smartphone apps. Special thanks to my co-producer, Michelle Escobar. Alan Howard is associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz. Special thanks to my assistant, Sean Sullivan. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm, she is a bookworm, we are all bookworms.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
Read this, read that, read this, bookworm. Read this, read that, read this.
I am a bookworm, he is a bookworm. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm when Rita Bullwinkle is our guest.
I want to tell you about a new show from the Financial Times called Life and Art from FT Weekend, hosted by me, Lila Raptopoulos. Life and Art is twice a week. On Mondays, I have a guest on to talk about life and how to live a good one. Everything from winter travel to cooking to living more creatively. And on Fridays, we talk art. Two FT journalists and I discuss a piece of culture that's in the air. New music, movies, and more. Find Life and Art from FT Weekend wherever you listen.